Hello, and welcome to the Development Debrief with Catherine Van Sickle, the stories-based podcast that interviews professionals, donors, and thought leaders in the field of fundraising. I remember rolling my eyes at my dad as each high school holiday came around. Instead of a free day with friends or a fun activity, we would use that time to network. My dad and I would look at colleges, or he would encourage me to reach out to people who did work I was interested in. Though it was annoying as a teenager, now I realize that this is how I learned how to network. Today's guest, Blake Davis, also started networking from a young age. He opens our conversation with telling the story of his early networking in college. And then we move on to talking about navigating hierarchy through networking, and get as granular as talking about effective cold emails for outreach. Blake tells us, ultimately, good networking looks like good portfolio management. Blake uses the word pure a few times as he talks about making connections. Listen for his examples. They are powerful. Blake Davis currently serves as the Associate Vice President for Development at Southern Methodist University, located in Dallas, Texas. In this role, Blake oversees the Principal and Major Gifts Program, the Plan Giving Program, Corporate and Foundation Relations Operations, as well as a new initiative focused on principal gift-rated parent prospects. Blake has over 13 years of higher education development experience at a wide variety of institutions, including the University of Chicago, the Wharton School of Business, the University of Washington, while he started his career in development as a student caller at the University of Kansas. He lives in Dallas with his wife, Lindsay, and their two children, Vivian and Graham. Let's get started. Hey, Blake, welcome to the Debrief.
Hey, Catherine, thanks for having me.
We are going to talk today about networking, the ever-important skill in every field at every level.
I'm excited. It's something I think that is a value proposition for all employees, regardless of what level you're at in an institution. And it gives you an opportunity to not only work for yourself, but also improve your technical skills and the way you do your business on a day-to-day basis.
So when did you first learn to network? You told me about reaching out to your president of your college. That was one of your early memories of networking.
Yeah, that was maybe youthful ignorance, I'd say. But at the University of Kansas, go Jayhawks, as an undergraduate student, I worked in the call center and was a student caller before a student manager, which is development's been my true profession since I was 19. And as I was about 3 months prior to graduation, I got this wild hair in my idea in my head that I needed to meet the man who ran the place before I got out of there. So I sent, as a maybe ignorant senior, a cold email to Chancellor Robert Hemingway and said basically those exact words, that I think before graduation I should sit down with the man who runs this place. And the gentleman that he was, he said yes. So I had a 30-minute meeting with him in his office, terrified, but excited to have a chance to have a conversation with somebody who was running my institution. But by the end of it, I had asked him if he'd write a letter of recommendation for grad school for me, which again, he didn't know me that well and never taught a class, but he appreciated, I think, my gumption and agreed to do so. And I got into grad school, so it all worked out.
So do you need a goal like the grad school letter to network with someone? Should you have an intentional end game?
I think if you're looking for a strategic professional growth, it's always good to have a goal in mind, whether that's to network with somebody who's at an institution you aspire to work at, or what that's in a position somewhere that you aspire to be. But I do think there's some purity in trying to understand the broader aspects of our industry by understanding the people who are working in it and around it. So going in there with a sense of natural curiosity to learn about the other people who are operating in your field is an important thing. Keeping in mind both your strategic career vision, but also the general benefit of knowing more people and taking pieces of information from them about your related field is a positive.
What I love so much about you making that outreach as a college student was that it was kind of outside of the box. You were looking at the big picture and you wanted to connect with, as you say, the guy who runs this place. Is that something people would welcome now? Like, would you suggest that a junior person reach out to the vice president or their boss's boss? I mean, how do people navigate that, you know, those layers of management?
I think that's a really interesting question. And I think my answer has changed as I've gotten older. I remember when I was working at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, I was a senior MGO and one of the many amazing people that were working at Penn. And I decided that I needed to email the vice president and have coffee with him. And he said he was thankful and said, yes, we had that coffee, encouraged me to come back. And it was really eye-opening for me to learn from somebody in that close setting at such an amazing institution. But I also know that that coffee and that outreach got back to my supervisor, who had questions about why was I skipping so many levels and going to the top. And if there's career progression questions, maybe I should talk with them first. And so you have to be mindful of the perception of your outreach and its purity, and understand too that unless there's some sort of direct relationship, that maybe you should consider how you level up your networking. It's usually they say to reach up to one level higher than you at another institution, or maybe two levels higher at most.
So I think this, I'm not original in this idea that networking is very similar to working a portfolio, to managing prospects. It's all about building relationships. What parallels would you draw with that metaphor?
It's 100% similar to managing a portfolio, and it's about having honest communication and stewarding that flame of a relationship. You need to have appropriate follow-up and follow-through when you request time or you get time from someone. You need to thank that person for the time and frame the request for what they are. Is this a mentorship type of conversation? Is this a peer-to-peer conversation? Is this an interest in their institution or a job opening conversation? To be honest and forthright with that, it's like when you hire new gift officers to work a portfolio and their title is MGO and it's on their signature line in their email, they have to know when they're reaching out that people have some sort of general idea of what that conversation will lead to. And when you're doing the same thing in networking, you have to frame it in a way that is respectful of the requestee's time and to be forthright in that. So you're going to have people that you want to network with, just like a portfolio member that are unresponsive. You're going to have people right. in your portfolio that are overly responsive, and you feel like a networking call maybe has turned into work instead of a joyful experience. So it's very similar and just as important, in my opinion, for development professionals to network with other leaders in our field.
I like that you said a joyful experience. I think great networking can be joyful. Absolutely. What are successful examples of that? How can we have more joyful connections with people that we're reaching out to and building relationships with?
It's about that natural progression of a relationship. And sometimes when you go into something with lower expectations or no self-interest is when you can truly find that purest form of networking.
I agree.
There's this group, some friends and former podcast guests of yours had started, which was Matt Hutter and Ben Porter and Letty Light at Cal Berkeley. It was about raising money for strategic initiatives. So things that are more nebulous at our research institutions. And we all came together in kind of like this nuanced way to figure out what it means to be truly, donor-centered and idea-centered on philanthropy without natural constituencies. And going to that conference and thinking creatively without expectations really built some very strong relationships with all of us. And I consider Letty and Ben and Matt Hutter at Duke like some of my favorite professional networking colleagues because of the successes they've had in their career and that joyful experience of thinking creatively together, and that you're not alone in this kind of nebulous world of strategic initiative fundraising. So I think going in there pure and understanding that it can't feel forced, and it's like you don't want to ever compare it to dating, but like if you're forcing conversations and it's not flowing well, you might not get a second date. And it's the same thing in relationship networking.
Of course, you guys had fun talking about those nebulous topics because it's a hard nut to crack. I'm sure you all had that in common. You all had great ideas. Would you suggest to our listeners that they create something like that, perhaps more informal, but if they're struggling with an issue, reach out to peers and start a conversation?
100%. You're always looking for somebody to either share joy with or share misery with. And sometimes you can do both. If you're running a business school, reach out to every other business school in your athletic division or athletic conference and start an informal group there. Have a LinkedIn chat or a page where you can share information or questions. Do a Zoom call, those sort of things. And early on when COVID hit, I've always heard of this phrase of kind of good gardening, and you should always be pruning your weeds and planting new seeds and ensuring that you're producing a good garden. And I like to do that with the same thing with relationships. So when COVID started, I wasn't traveling. I had, you know, at least 8 hours of my time back every 2 weeks that I wasn't on an airplane. So I proactively reached out to all these people on LinkedIn and through different emails and opened up my schedule to network both up and down in terms of job responsibilities, to really learn best practices and commiserate and learn what's driving all of our institutional changes. And it's just such an important thing to think about when you're building your own personal brand and career, is that you can find and take little things from everyone. There's this idea of imposter syndrome that some of us live with because, you know, we get to eat $30 entree salads that's not on our credit card and sit in hotel rooms that are nicer than we think we should. And
I really miss that.
Oh, I miss it too. We all miss those sort of things. But the fact that there's so many high integrity, ethical people that are doing this work all across the country for a wide variety of institutions and organizations, there's going to be more things in common than not. So if you reach out with pure intentions and a hope of both learning and sharing knowledge, it's going to end well in your favor.
So is that what you've done? Can you tell us the 30,000 foot view of how you've built your own network and thought about your own community?
I've been pretty lucky as I progressed through this field to work for great leaders. And I think institutional cultures and development cultures are completely driven top down. And whoever is your VP or person in charge and their leadership team, that's what you're going to attract and generate beneath you. That's just the point of when you're looking either at new opportunities or to network at an institution, truly try to figure out what their vice president, either or he or she's vision is and what their culture is, because it's such a vital part of it. To me, I think I always, when I start a new position, which I've done a few times, it's the first thing you should do is start networking within your own institution so you can learn about what makes this place tick and what is the culture and who are the people that I can go to in a time of need and who are going to be those great partners and stewards for me, because you can learn so much from somebody, even if you have a different personality style, who's worked at the same institution that you've just joined. And then start within your region. If you're in the Dallas area, start reaching out to the other great nonprofits, whether that's TCU or Children's Hospital or UT Southwestern, like finding those other, you know, pillars of excellence in your community where you can learn, because you all are going to be fishing in the same pool, particularly for donor talent. And you might be able to learn some insider information about somebody you're working with or get to know those quirks too. If you're new to a level of institution, if you've gone from a state to a private or an elite private to a smaller public, those sort of things, try networking to that new level of an institution. Working at a Harvard, a Yale, a Cornell, those sort of places, Columbia, Chicago, then going to a big public, there's going to be some different changes and challenges the way you do business. And the same thing going from a University of Florida, Michigan, UT Austin to an SMU, you're going to have different challenges and different day-to-day operations as you would there. So utilize every opportunity to look at the different layers of the onion of how somebody might operate differently at a different style of institution than you came from. I think it's important to look through LinkedIn, constantly on LinkedIn, seeing what's moving, what's shaking, who's going where, who's gone what, putting that kind of 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon together, like, oh, that VP knew that VP and they bounced and then they came back. Like, that's a fun game for me to play. And take recruiting calls. I know you might have an episode soon with an active recruiter, but recruiters are fantastic, great assets for our industry. They're trying to find the best people and the brightest people because they want happy clients. And the more that they can know about you and your idiosyncrasies and the things that make you special, they'll be your advocate, even if they're in an active search or not. So I've met fantastic colleagues and friends who were pushed to me through recruiters, and I've met great recruiters that I love and respect for the work they do for our field.
What are things people should avoid when they're networking?
It's kind of like a bad donor call, you know? You can't be inauthentic. You can't not follow through. If you promise to do something or say something or to make a connection, you need to do it. If you don't do your homework, In the same way, if you haven't read the background or the bio of the institution, if you ask too quickly, you know, all of those things that sound like you're meeting with a donor for the first time, but every person is going to have a different pace of play and a different pace of relationship building. So if you fly out there in the first meeting and say, I want you to be my mentor, that's a word that can be loaded to some people, that some people take that statement very seriously. And it's a commitment for a lifetime and a career. A previous guest on your podcast, my former boss, Shauna Hawking, to be a mentor to her means something much different than a lot of people. She takes that very seriously, and she takes that from the day she hires you through the rest of your career. And that's a true statement in fact to her. So if somebody came to her, and I don't want to put words in her mouth, and said, will you be my mentor? She didn't know them. She might have pause. So you have to understand the pace of relationship and the way you're hoping to groom and cultivate that, not just for your own self-interest, but for the way you can learn from them and potentially be helpful to them in another way down the road.
How do you pick up on someone's pace?
If you make a request for networking in written communication, whether it's an email or a LinkedIn, you can tell how they respond, typically how gung-ho they are for this opportunity. If they pass you off, if they pass you down, if they don't respond or say, I'm very busy, those sort of things. But I think it's still true to a donor relationship too. We've all had donor visits that have gone extraordinarily quick and extraordinarily well. Like, well, I know why you're here and I appreciate it, so how can I help? And you have to have that elevator pitch ready. But we've also been in ones where it's been a slow dance for 36 months as you figure out their interests and their appetite for solicitation and how do you frame it. So you have to trust your gut. And I think that's why it's so important that you can refine your networking skills internally with people you trust. You know, you do role plays for donor meetings a lot with your colleagues and fake cold calls. Do a networking conversation with somebody you trust internally and see how it feels. Have them invite you to network with somebody they're trustworthy and close with too, so that afterwards you can get feedback and how it went and you can help affect your style and your approach.
And you had said that if you ask for the meeting, that the person you're asking is in control.
Yes. They are now inviting you to participate in their world. In the same way a donor is inviting you to participate in their home or at their restaurant or at their coffee shop. And that to me is about a sign of respect and allowing them to dictate the pace of play and to dictate the relationship and to not make inferences or expectations about further interactions. I mean, for example, if you're going to somebody because you really want to work at their institution and there's a job opening already and you're halfway into the conversation, say, well, would you be an internal reference for me and recommend me for this opening? That's pretty quick for a lot of people. You have to allow them to say, wow, I've really enjoyed this conversation, Catherine. I'd love to be an advocate for you, or at least introduce you to the hiring manager. You have to let them provide the consent for further communication.
So you mentioned written communication. Can you give us a peek under the tent of what your emails look like when you're asking for either a first time meeting or a conversation with someone who you don't really know?
When I think about how I send an invitation for a donor visit, it's a lot in the same ways that I send an invitation for networking. One thing that I found that's worked pretty well, in particular with donors, is I would put everything they needed to know in the subject line. So if I'm at SMU, it's SMU, New York, the date, and then something else like introduction or coffee. But sometimes in particular with people who maybe were either unengaged or disengaged from an institution, I would say something like SMU-New York-We Messed Up. And you'd think like, why would you write that as an open email to somebody? Well, number one, I think they're going to read it. And usually they did. And in the letter or the written body of the email, it's something like, you know, as I look through your career progression and the success you've had professionally, it is very obvious that your alma mater hasn't done the most appropriate job keeping you engaged with your institution. As a leader of industry, we would love to find times for you to share your intellectual capital, your time, treasure, and talent with something. But I understand that we may have dropped the ball for 30 years. I'm new in this role. I'm new at this institution. Would it be okay if I got 30 minutes of your time to learn a little bit more about your progression and ways you might engage with your alma mater? And maybe surprisingly, those like knocked it out of the park for like getting responses and meetings back. But I think being truthful, showcasing if there has been a lapse in communication for donors, But as you transition that to networking, I'm forthright in my request. So if it's an email to another VP cold or to an AVP on the institution, I'll say networking request / introduction, and then write in my email why I want to visit with them, what my career progression has been, and how I hope to learn more about either the way they operate their institution or their path through the field. And most people, I mean, we're lucky because we work in an industry where we have generally nice people, will be responsive to that or acknowledge that and either take on that opportunity themselves or point you in the direction of somebody who would be a very strong conversation for you. I remember maybe when I was finishing up at UChicago, I sent one of those notes to a high up at Boston College, because Boston College is like either an aspirant peer for SMU, because it was before that transition. And I want to learn more about their shop, just because I wanted to see what it meant to work at a historically faith-based institution and a private school and an urban market, all those things. And I think it was their senior VP wrote me back a lovely note and said, congratulations on the upcoming move. This is fantastic. Wishing you the best. Your best point of contact for us might be X, Y, and Z. And then that led to a multi-phone call with those other people. So I was able to learn more about their institution, different varieties of their kind of strategic plan and their operations. And it was fantastic. And I didn't feel discouraged by not getting to talk with the person I originally sent the email to. I took it as an opening and an opportunity to learn more about a place that person obviously cares about and manages. Because you always hope that if you either can be impressive or honest or open to other people, that they'll report back appropriately, and that will lead to further conversations if needed.
Yeah, I also like the idea of letting the universe work as it may, you know, that maybe you were supposed to meet that person that you had no idea about, and, you know, letting that flow. The other thing I like that you said is really good advice for people that are further on in their career listening, where if you're feeling overwhelmed by requests, that it's perfectly appropriate to, in fact, punt over to somebody else. Is that what I'm hearing you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I think heavy is the head that wears the crown, and that can be with time. I thought about like our donors. I mean, the amount of times they have to get solicited by institutions of all sizes and scales has to be quite wearing at sometimes. I almost think of them like they're getting introduced as a starting lineup of a basketball game, and they're high-fiving, but it's all charities with their hands out.
Oh my gosh.
So I can think of the same way for a vice president, because there are always high gumption, gregarious people who are going to send them the note, even though it might be three levels higher than the person they should be connecting with. Mm-hmm. And if they can appropriately acknowledge, appreciate, and push that to someone else in their organization that might be a better fit for that first conversation, I think that's generous and kind and successful.
And empowering to that other person too.
Absolutely. I mean, in my level, I get a lot of requests for networking from people who are job seekers. And that's fantastic, because we want to be a place where people want to work. But usually it makes more sense for them to talk to another person in my organization first, so they can truly align them, whether that's in the annual giving alumni relations leadership gift vertical or the director of development vertical or my verticals and principal and major gifts. You want to ensure that they're speaking with the person who's going to be the best advocate for their hopes. And I think that's respectful of both the networking request and of your own time.
Well, one of the reasons I was so happy to have you speak on this topic is that you really have covered a broad swath of regions and types of institutions, whether it's working at Chicago or Penn or UW or where you are now at SMU. You've also been in several different cities as a result. How have you learned from being in a wide variety of institutions, and how has that informed your networking?
I referenced a little bit earlier about how I've had the opportunity to work for great leaders and managers, whether that was Connie Kravis and Greg Sheridan and Lee Hack at UW, or John Zeller at Penn, or Ken Minotti and Sharon Marine at Chicago, and Shauna Hawking at Penn. And each one of them taught me something that I continue to carry forward. And all those schools are different in their own ways. I mean, UW taught me how to work and network with a rah-rah state school, where you have a responsibility both fiduciary and intellectually for a state and what it means to grow from the sleepy school in Seattle to this national research powerhouse of outstanding medicine, and what it meant to go to Wharton, where it's an industry professional school, and the power of networks within that Wharton network, the brand, the value, the class years, the reunion, the cohort model of education. And if you want to see why networking matters, talk to some Wharton grads, from the VCs to the PE firms, all of those investment banking guys, they fund each other's businesses in a lot of ways. And that Wharton connection gives them a sense of commonality and an entrance that is really unrivaled. And Chicago was a place that was just unrivaled with intellectual curiosity and analytics. The way you do things, the way you think about it, letting data drive decisions. But all those cities are different too, if you think stereotypically about the type of people that live in each one and how you might network differently. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same way if you're working a true regional portfolio as a gift officer. Your meetings and meeting times and locations and purposes in New York City might be completely different than if you're taking a trip to LA or San Francisco, let alone if you go to Houston or Chicago. And you're going to have different people in all those different types of cities, but you have to understand those regional interests and challenges and events and news so that you are as fluent and dangerous as you can be in the scope of today's events that matter to them. So when we're doing homework to network or doing homework on a portfolio, doing that pre-study, it's important to know what might be affecting someone's day-to-day life and be top of mind in the hallway conversations or on the NPR radio station as they drive into work.
So one thing that's really helpful with that is Google Alerts, which I do with, top people or institutions. What are other things that you do to keep on top of things?
Yeah, Google Alerts are fantastic. LinkedIn is huge. I encourage people to connect with their prospects, their donors, and their network on LinkedIn. I mean, how else can you celebrate somebody's successes? LinkedIn's in the news section is fantastic. If you see a prospect or a friend or somebody on the move on there, screenshot it and send it to them and say, holy cow, so great to see you. I'm proud of your successes. Those sort of things are important. We're in almost like information overload sometimes in today's world too. So trying to figure out when you're keeping up with people, what their preferred method of communication is. I'm finally now texter to donors. I've historically not done that because it would annoy me if somebody texted me that I didn't know. But I found that after establishing a relationship with people that some of them, that's their preferred way, and I can get a response from them and I can be more concise with that information, that their email inbox is flooded with 1,000 different requests a day, but they're going to answer a text. So understanding your preferred communication style, whether it's while networking or managing a portfolio, is a gift that everybody needs to work on.
Yeah.
Are you a texter with your donors?
I have just started doing it more since the pandemic. I mean, it's hard to remember life before this, but there were a few donors that had texted me. And so I would text them because they had established that comfort, but I hadn't been the first one to text until recently. And I'm seeing the same thing you are, that it's actually nice for them because it's, in some ways it's easier.
It's interesting, like how a little bump of acknowledgement can mean the world to somebody. At SMU, we have a very robust Greek system. And last week they announced the results of the pageantry. So who got, Kappa and who got Chi and all those sort of things. And it's a huge week for our parents of current students who are freshmen. And when I got the results and I could text somebody and say, wow, so glad that Brooke got her Kappa Gamma bid this week. I know how much you and Susan were worried about her finding her social circle here at SMU. Congrats. And I sent probably 30 of those. You don't be careful when you copy and paste that the names don't end up in the wrong place. But the response rate was incredible. People felt validated. They said, way to be on top of things. This is an important moment for us. Look forward to seeing you in the spring. That sort of stuff. And if you can take that same approach to allow those little bumps of encouragement to people and acknowledgement where you're reaching out without a business purpose, and it all fits into the broader plan. But if you truly just are excited for somebody and care about somebody, and I think you should, those little notes mean the world.
Well, your LinkedIn says small town relationship building within the biggest markets in the United States. And that quote really struck me because it made me think, what small town? Where's Blake from? And of course, we know what the markets are, but tell us what you mean by that.
So I grew up in rural Kansas. And by rural, I mean, I never lived in a town larger than 2,000 people. I graduated high school, I think, with 18, and we were close to 2 hours away from a Walmart in every direction. I mean, that's rural America. And these small towns are great places to be from. And they teach you a lot about the longevity of relationships because a lot of people don't leave or come in. This is kind of a funny story, I'd say, but once I was in the grocery store, there's only one grocery store in my town. And in my town, my dad is also the school superintendent. So we were maybe famous, for lack of better words. So I guess as well-known me, a 16-year-old me, I used some colorful language in the grocery store. I won't repeat what word I said. I only knew that I used this colorful language in the store because before I'd even gotten home, my mom had gotten a call about my language choice from a community member. And this was before cell phones, so somebody hopped on a landline and reported my transgression pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And I think I was mad at the time, but now, like, I think that's just so important because, you know, a good community governs themselves and keeps each other accountable. You're going to be dealing with people for a long time, so always take that true, authentic version of yourself to those relationships. And take that long view over a quick decision that could have negative consequences. So when I'm working a portfolio or networking with other colleagues, I really want to think about the 35-year view or the 50-year view over the six-month view, because as someone who's maybe earlier in their career, it's kind of a scary thing to think that I probably have 29 more years of professional work until I retire. So the decisions I make today will have ramifications for a long time. And in the same way that is when you're working a donor portfolio, you should have that same level of attentiveness to the longevity of the institution.
Now, the small town approach, I know a little bit about it because both of my parents grew up in a small town in Illinois, but I myself have grown up in metro areas. I went to college in an urban area. I live in an urban area. Do they blend? Can you blend those? I almost think of them as different cultures within our country. Like, how do you know when it's the right time to bring that? Like, imagine calling someone at UChicago about a sorority bid. Like, that wouldn't work, would it?
No matter the size of your setting, there's always networks within. In the way you would treat your friends and colleagues at Columbia, there's probably networks within your networks there. And now through this podcast, you're developing a whole different style of networks with people all across the country who are doing a variety of different things. The purity of relationship building when it comes to truthfulness and longevity shines through no matter the size or the scope of the organization. Penn and Wharton is a big place, but the Wharton thing felt so close-knit. It was like this, not get out of jail free card, but this validation card you just put in front of somebody and said, I'm a Wharton or two, or I work here. And it just opened up this circle. And no matter if you worked for a business school that has, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 students at a time, it still felt very intimate and small. So I would challenge that the purity in the way you build those relationships doesn't change in those markets. Maybe the language and the approach does. You know, a New Yorker is different than a Kansas person. So I don't know. It's a great question, Catherine, and I haven't thought about it more than I just regurgitated here, but I think you're onto something.
Yeah, I put you on the spot a little bit, but I'm genuinely curious about it too. And I think so much of it goes back to listening, goes back to picking up on cues from people. But I love that you have that blend, because I think one of the things that can make us better professionals is having the different experiences and then adding them on top of one another and weaving them into a bigger tapestry.
My first true major guest job was at Iowa State University, and I worked for the veterinary college. And I learned when I needed to wear boots to work, because I'd be stomping through a farmland pasture talking to somebody as they worked, or wow, literally live birthing a cow on my donor visit. And then I went to Seattle, was dealing with Microsoft and Amazon tech people. Then I went to Wharton, was dealing with investment bankers and real estate tycoons. I went to Chicago and talked with Nobel Prize winning economists. Like, you know, I went from standing in manure to reading about Milton Friedman within 6 years. So, or maybe it's a little longer than that. It's like 8 years. But it just shows you that we are all a culmination of a variety of opportunities and experiences. And if you take each one as a chance to grow and learn, that it can really truly make you into who you are today.
Blake, thank you so much. I would love to end with my signature question, which is, what do you know for sure?
This is a tough question because I think I'm always learning. But to me, what I know for sure is that, Catherine, you and I work in the greatest profession in the world. It's filled with people who are working tirelessly to better institutions of higher learning, faith, health, and social causes. And the people who choose this profession are open and willing to share their stories and experience if asked appropriately and with true intentions. So go out there and make some new connections.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Blake brought up some really amazing ideas for us to think about improving our skills and trying new things. The first one I want to highlight is networking internally. This is something I myself have also done, and the power of it is unparalleled. Knowing people up, down and sideways to you in the organization will help you in ways that you can never quantify. The second is creating support groups. I love this idea. I love reaching out to people who may have similar struggles or just creating a community for yourself, either within the profession or within your own institution. Third, Blake talked about networking role play. This is something that could really help if you're nervous about a conversation or an ask that you know you need to make to advance your career. Last but not least, be you. Blake talked about peer networking. He talked about making natural connections, and that is only possible if you highlight who you truly are, where you're from, what you care about, and what you value. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Blake. And please connect with me on Instagram at devdebrief or on LinkedIn. I would absolutely love to hear from you. Have a great day.